Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast from the International Motorsports Association and Radio Show Limited.
It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Well, a demonstration of driving skills, which is as entertaining as it is impressive. Johnny Morlam, the pass for second that went on a couple of moments ago, just unbelievable. We'll get back to that in a moment. Let's check in with the battle at the front of the GT Daytona field, where Roman De Angelis is just out of the heart of racing. Aston Martin is with Shea Adam.
2021 sprint champion. You would love to tack on an endurance race win to that, wouldn't you, Roman?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty successful year for us. We've won a couple sprint races and obviously the sprint championship. Had a podium in Sebring and in Watkins Glen for some endurance races, but we want to get that endurance win. Really pushing. Ross is obviously in the car now, doing a great job. We led a bunch of laps today. We have a good pace, so we'll see what happens.
We saw that the traffic was crazy during the day, but what's it like at night?
Yeah, it's a completely different story at nighttime. At least that during the day, you can kind of see who's coming and what's coming. At night, it's just a massive beam of light. And you just hope that when you turn that they're not there. So it's definitely pretty crazy. But, I mean, that's the nature of the sport and that's the nature of this race. It's survival. So just got to get through the last few hours and hopefully we're the one to beat at the end. So
good luck.
Thank you.
Fantastic move for second place there by Philippe Albuquerque. And starting to cut into the lead, Jeremy, of Juan Montoya.
Yeah, that was amazing. It was a tremendous pass. But also on the next lap, the number 31 car almost got it back again because those two, the number 10 and number 31, came up on Catherine Legg going through the turn 10 and turn A. Albuquerque was really very, very smart. Super patient, waited to the exit of the right-hander, ducked to the inside of Catherine. Number 31 car, Pipo Derani, tried to carry forward momentum, go around the outside of Catherine, but he quickly realised that wasn't going to work because three wide going up to the hill, up to the top of the hill there, is really, really, really asking a lot of questions and being very, very correct. Particularly with 2 hours remaining in this race, that wasn't the smartest move. So the smart move was, and what he did was back off and tuck in behind, but that was super tight.
Yes, that was diplomatic language there, Mr. Shaw, three wide underneath the bridge.
Catherine Legg, though, to be fair, still gave him enough room, so he did have to back off and brake because he was running out of room, but then he still did actually go round the outside of her, coming up over the brow of the hill, dropping down into 12. So, he's taking no prisoners.
She was paying attention there. Oh. That was classy.
Oh, yeah, that could have been the end of both of their races.
Steering rack vibration issues on the 88 hardpoint car. Had overheating issues earlier on. Rather unusual, that, for the venerable Porsche flat six engine. Don't often see them having engine issues. Though in the GT3 version of the car, the radiators are still down to the front, so they are prone, like the road cars actually, they are prone to taking a little bit of damage, either stone damage or any accident damage. 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche going through turn number one is leading in GT Daytona, but Lawrence Vanthoor is right in the wheel tracks with the purple Tron-like LEDs over the header rails on that car, and that's first and second in GT Daytona, with in third place Ross Gunn sitting right behind them. Top three in GTD together heading down towards turn number six. The yellow lights shining through the darkness. The Aston just trying to pick a move to try and drag past the two Porsches ahead. Two of Vysak's finest against the Aston. And very good exit by Ross Gunn. Now, can the Vantage with the 4-litre V8 mid-mounted in the front, if you like. It's a long way back in the engine compartment. He gets a good run. May just gets to the inside of the Faf car. No, that goes down the inside and takes the lead. New leader in GTD at turn 10. And still Ross Gunn having a look. Will go down the inside, down towards turn 12. Didn't quite get the overlap enough and rather sensibly backed out of it. But good driving by all of them. This is a cracking scrap for the top three places in GTD.
Absolutely, and that was really good. Good, actually, the Porsches are obviously probably already being told over the radio they're fighting for position, but don't take each other out. They're both in Porsches. But yeah, that was a really nice move from Vantor there to take that. And then the Aston nearly got a run, thought about sticking his nose down the inside into 12, but you just can't do that. And then behind the DPI battle, you can see them desperately trying to actually overtake. I think Pippo Durrani is actually sort of holding up Ollie Jarvis and Simon Pagenaud behind him, but then with the traffic, the gap's coming back out and then in again. But you can tell that they're really trying to keep that gap down and use the traffic to their advantage.
The two WeatherTech Porsches have just changed position as the 97 Kevin Estre has gone by Mathieu Jaminet just over the top of the brow there. Now, that's not a normal turn two. That's a normal overtaking spot. So that might have been orchestrated as well. Meantime, in eighth position, that's the in their class, the battered and bruised number two. That is the United Autosport car. Come on, John, get your brain working. That seemed to be going a little bit slower than it should have been there.
Was that was the LMP3 or the P2
the
car?
That's the P3
you're talking about. Yeah.
He looked
okay actually to me, but maybe I'm sure your eyes aren't deceiving you there, John.
I thought it was getting passed by a couple of GT cars, and
that might well be the case depending on who's on board.
Well, that's a very good point.
Was that the car with the alternator, was it?
Yes, that was the car that lost all. So maybe that's back out again.
Yeah.
That's Niklas back behind the wheel of that. He was uber quick earlier on, and in fact led the race and led it in some style. If you remember, he put the GT Le Mans field between himself and the rest of the LMP3 field. But then they had that rather odd total failure. We had two at the almost exactly the same time, the number two LMP3, and it was the 38 Performance Tech car.
Yes, it was.
Within quarter of a mile of each other on the track, one at turn four, one at turn exit at turn five. The battle at the front of the field, Jeremy, is absolutely outstanding. Albuquerque's got the lead down to Montoya, down to around about 2.5 seconds now. Pippo Durrani's a second further back. Then it's Ollie Jarvis and Simon Pagenaud. So we have the top five within 5.5 seconds, and only 4 seconds further back is Tristan Vautier. This is boiling up nicely.
Well, it certainly is. It's just fantastic, isn't it, right now? I mean, you picking a winner out of this lot, no thank you very much. It's a tremendous contest. Juan Pablo Montoya, every now and again, it looks like he might be edging away a little bit, and then the lead gets whittled back down again by Philip Albuquerque, who's driven a brilliant stint in this Colico Minolta Acura Calama 10, seeking to lead wire to wire in the championship this season. That's the car that won the opening race, of course, at Daytona, the Rolex 24. It's led all the way to since then, but it finishes behind the number 31 car, which it was behind it just a few laps ago, then it would lose the championship at the last hurdle. But Philip Albuquerque has momentarily at least set that record straight back in front.
And Jeremy, the GT Le Mans battle is heating up as well. So Jaminet let Estre go through and swap the 79 WeatherTech car in second to the 97 WeatherTech car in second. Estre has closed the gap down to Nick Tandy in the number four Corvette, Johnny, substantially, to the point where he's almost within striking distance.
He's in the tour now.
I mean, going down the back straight.
He's looking a lot quicker, actually. He's looking like he's getting a really good exit out of seven. He's looking really quick on the straight. And again, it's like I said to you before, in terms of the lights behind you, you can't always tell exactly where they are. But Nick Tandy's a wily old fox. He'll know that he's coming. But he's getting really close. The last time he was just as close to, and then a prototype got in between them at 12, and he fell back slightly from Nick Tandy, Kevin Estre, that is, in the Porsche. But this battle is going to go to the end. Two fantastic GT drivers at the top of their game fighting for the victory.
And Of course, Tandy knows all about the strengths and weaknesses
of the Porsche,
Absolutely. And of Kevin Estra as well. He's driven with him in the past, including at the Nürburgring Nordschleife with Estra, which Estra, the French driver, did win this year.
So long as we don't have a repeat of the contact like we did in the Bahrain race, we'll be okay.
Yes, I think that would have had somewhat of a different outcome had we had IMSA stewarding going on there. Incident responsibility is normally assigned very quickly.
If he gets the same run out of seven that he got last time, this is going to be a case of Nick maybe having to defend down into 10A because he's sat right behind him now.
He's actually dragged the 79 Chaminade car along with him. It's back, but it's not that far back behind that battle. Now, Ross Gunn has got up into second in GTD for Harter Racing, and that's because Trent Hindman's pitted in the number 16 Porsche from the second place in GT Daytona. So Vanter's gone through. She's keeping an eye on that as we keep watching this battle at the front of the field, down to under 0.2 seconds in GT Le Mans, 2.2 seconds in between first and second. There's going to be a driver change here down at Wright Motorsports, and that, in fact, has already happened.
Yes, it has. Jan Halen back aboard this car, the number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche with a carbon hood and a carbon roof. I love it. They've already changed all four of the Michelin tires. They're lifting up the wiper. Ooh, windshield tear off. Wow, they are being really nice to Jan Halen a week after getting married to Margaret. Hello, Margaret. The air jet comes out and the fuel hose still attached. 30, 31, 32. So the Wright team with about 10 seconds to spare. No, it was short. 35 seconds worth of fuel. So that means that they were 5 seconds shy. They pulled Trent in to try and get Jan Halen back on track a little bit sooner.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of strategy going on there, Shea. Thank you very much for that VP Racing Fuel pit and paddock report. Still Tandy leading in the Corvette, going down to 10 and 10A again. Prototype's about to get involved. They're passing the 44 Magnus Acura NSX with Spencer Pumpelly on board. Now down towards turn
Corvette.
12.
Corvette seems to get a really good run out of 10B,
but
the Porsche
seems
to get a better run out of 7.
Yeah.
It's quite different.
Well, isn't that the joy, though, of sports car racing? Yeah, I know we talk about BOP and, you know, getting everybody on the same page, but that what you can't ever engineer and should never be thinking of engineering out is the relevant relative strengths and weaknesses of a car. Even if they make the similar lap time, they're not necessarily making the lap time in the same way in the same places on track. And I like that variety.
It is, so long as it is sort of spread out in terms of the corners and different types of corners and everything else, because there's nothing worse than having a car when you're on your own that can do a very quick lap time, but you're doing it in the corners and then you're going up against a car that's making a lot of its lap time on the straights, because ultimately in a race situation, the one making it up on the straights is always going to be able to beat
that's
the one in the corners,
you
because then you'll make it up on the straights, defend through the corners and then disappear. And again, Kevin
right
Estra this time, absolutely that prototype that ducked underneath Nick Tandy going into 7, and I suspect this is going to be a move down into 10A. I don't think Nick Tandy's going to be able to keep him behind here.
Oh, well, this side by side through 10.
There was contact.
Contact.
Nick Tandy's keeping his foot in.
Three times.
Pushes him right out onto the grass. That was a little bit naughty, that, and actually that's now let Chaminade back through ahead of his teammate in the Porsche.
The two Porsche, the WeatherTech Porsches, hunting as a pair here on the Singleton Corvette. Remember, the number three car out after the huge accident.
I wonder if Nick Tandy's got damage because he's getting caught really quickly now by the Chaminade Porsche. I wonder if he's got damage because there was a lot of contact coming out left rear to the side of the Porsche there coming out of 10B. And now Kevin Astra's dropped right back. I'm pretty sure it's Chaminade that's behind him. Have I got that right?
Yeah.
And he's catching him quite quickly. So it looks to me like potentially...
Very, very interesting. I'm sure that'll be being looked at. It was side-to-side contact through the first part of 10.
It looked to me like Estra definitely got some damage. He got pushed very wide, and it really kicked him out. He went right out into the dirt, and that was quite a lot of contact that Nick Tandy lent on him coming out, and actually they were side-by-side banging the rear wheels.
Rule in IMSA is that even if someone tries to go around the outside, puts themselves in that dangerous position, which you try not to do, that you have to give them a car's width. Through the exit of the corner. I'm not sure that was the case there. certainly the 79 of Jaminet came through, had to avoid his teammate actually as he rejoined. My worry there would be, is there any wheel damage or valve stem damage of the cars running so close together? But that would have happened straight away.
Yeah,
so
valve
I think that if you pull a valve stem, it just goes down immediately.
It looked like Jaminet really caught Nick Tandy. Now, whether Nick was just assessing whether he had more damage, but he seems to have got his head down and started to inch away again. He's certainly not being caught as quickly as he was. And as we see the Kevin Estra
97
car
in the pits
coming into the pit lane, and it'd be interesting to see what damage down to Shea Adams. I'm sure she'll find out. They're changing all four tyres at the moment.
Was that car due in any way before that side-to-side contact, or have they been called in as a result of that contact?
Were they expecting him in? No. Is there right side damage? Yes. It looks like the shark took a bite out of the dive board. On the right-hand side, the running board has a serious indentation in it where there used to be carbon fiber, and now there's just carbon fiber shards. That was not a planned stop, but we do have DPIs with teams up on the wall. Mazda pitting soon, as well as the 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac, and Felipe Nasr is back up on the wall for them.
Yeah, that was only a 22-23 lap stint. So
why would he pit, though, with that level of damage? If it's not damage to stop you, I don't understand why he'd come in and pit. Because they didn't fix it. They just fueled and tired him, I think.
Unless there was a tyre issue.
Maybe.
I was concerned when I saw that level of contact side by side. The camber, that the amount that the bottom of the tyre sticks out different to the front, because you put the tyres at an angle so that when you're leaning on them, they flatten out. So he's well within the window of still getting to the end of the race with the same amount of pit stops. So I can see that. We'll have Jeremy Shaw with the Michelin Endurance Cup points in a moment. But first of all, some more pit stops from the front of the field. Ollie Jarvis from Mazda and Shea Pitmadurani for Whelen Engineering and Cadillac.
Chelsea will be happy to hear that Ollie is staying aboard the 55 Mazda, which is quite dirty and a little bit smeared on some of the names, but it's still going round and round. Fuel and tires for this car. Fuel, tires, and driver change for the Whelen Engineering Cadillac, and Pipo out, as I mentioned, Felipe Nasr in. There was a pit stop also from the 12 Lexus. They were in not very long ago. Now just waiting on fuel. Now Ollie is allowed to leave. He's going to miss doing those kind of burnouts in the Mazda, because they are different from any other DPI we have, and they go out nose to tail way closer than when they came in.
Marvellous stuff. Thank you, Shea. Down in the pit lane, Jeremy Shaw. We should be getting all of the leaders in now. Yes, indeed we are.
Yeah, and the last lap around, the two were pretty much absolutely nose to tail as they came across the start finish line, as they are now as they come onto the pit lane to complete that 326 to make their scheduled stops.
So at the pit lane speed limit, which always, doesn't matter what it's set at, always seems to be ridiculously slow coming down in there. Now, looks like full service for the Acura, the Auto Nation XM Sirius XM car, and see above comments, Shea, for the second of the Acuras, the number 10 car.
Ricky Taylor is now aboard that car. He will take it to the checkered flag for Wayne Taylor Racing. For the 60, it is still Juan Pablo Montoya, but fuel and tires, you are correct on that. The 24 BMW was into the pit lane. That was no driver change. Augusto Farfus got new Michelins, scrub Michelins, and a lot of fuel.
Right, they're going to rejoin and reignite that battle. Quickly to Jeremy Shaw, who's been doing the arithmetic on Michelin Endurance Cup, and we have, I think, got a resolution in. Oh, off for the second of the Acuras. That was the 10, the Conningham and Alta car, and coming back on right in front of the Lexus, I think, as it was coming down through the first part of the SS. So that's cold tyres on the front of that car, just understeering off, Jim.
That's exactly what we were talking about. It makes it so tricky coming out of the pits, and he was really trying to keep it in there so that he could keep the...
It's Montoya.
Right, you see Wayne Taylor...
Ricky Taylor, excuse me.
Wayne Taylor looking to the skies. But that was a really tricky moment. And, of course, now he's not only got cold tyres, he's got dirty cold tyres.
Still the battle goes on in GTD, and in fact side by side on the back straight, Ross Gunn going for the lead. Lawrence Vanto is on the inside, the preferred line into turn 10. How late Can he break? And will the Aston be able to get around the outside? That Lexus is in the fight as well, and the number 10's just gone around them, that battle. So behind them it is the... No, I couldn't see whether it was the Aston or the Porsche that came out of that section of the track, but they were very close indeed down the back straight. I think the 23's taken the lead on the tracker. Yes, it has. Aston leads going into turn one. So that's Ross Gunn taking the lead in GTD. Right, Jeremy, sorry, interrupted you in mid-floor there. We do have some resolution in the Michelin Endurance Cup.
Yeah, but there's all sorts of things going on here. I mean, there's the number 48 car in the lead, by the way, that's Simon Pagenaud. So that becomes the sixth different leader out of the seven DPI cars, the 21st lead change. Yes, Michelin Endurance Cup then. In DPI, the number 60 car led at the 8-hour mark, so gets 5 points. Number 10 car that leads the way coming into this weekend gets 4. It has now has 42 and has officially clinched, well, unofficially clinched, I should say, the DPI Michelin Endurance Cup Michelin Endurance Cup. So in the LMP2 class, the PR1 Matheson Motorsports car led again, so getting a clean sweep so far. That now leads by 4 over number 8 car. So that will clinch that championship as well for PR1 Matheson Motorsports number 52. In LMP3, that's already been clinched by the car that led again, kind of 7-4 for Riley Hobbs. In GTLM, the Corvette number 4 now has insurmountable lead, so it will unofficially in the Michelin Endurance Cup in GTLM. GTD, the Wright Motorsports car once again was out in front and also has, I believe, an unassailable advantage now over the number 9 Porsche, which was second at the 8-hour mark, but is now 4 points behind. The biggest differential at any stage of the race is 3, 5, 4, 3, and 2. So by my reckoning, that would be fun as well.
Thank you, Jeremy. Doing the arithmetic on the fly there for the Michelin Endurance Cup. Points, of course, to be awarded at the end for the overall championship as well. And we'll keep you abreast of all of those situations as we get towards us. Michelin Post Race Tech as well to come after the show. Hashtag Michelin PRT to at IMSA Radio. Hello to you all joining us for the last 100 minutes or thereabouts of the 2021 WeatherTech Sports Car Championship season. Good to have your company, sound and vision. And into the pit lane for the car that was in the lead. It's their turn to relinquish that now. The number 48, Ali Cadillac. Ali Cadillac coming into the pit lane. Shea Adam has got the news on this one with this VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Report.
That would be fuel, tires, and a driver change. And I believe the black and white helmet belongs to Kamui Kobayashi. So winner of Big Le Mans gets to go at Petit Le Mans. I just love that symmetry that we've got going on for both he and Mike Conway. It's fuel and tires for that 48 Cadillac. Just waiting on the fuel. Another perfect stop by Action Express.
Car released. And as soon as the fuel comes out, goes back into the race, so that should be the number 60 of Juan Montoya who comes back into the lead. It was Ricky Taylor, of course, that went off coming out of the pits with cold front tyres in the number 10 car and dropped himself down behind Felipe Nasr and Ollie Jarvis. Still in this, certainly, Jeremy, all of the top five, possibly even this top six, whose Bourdais is, yes, still just about there. All of those top prototypes still certainly in with a shout here, Jeremy.
Well, yeah, and the top three, I think, are nose to tail, aren't they? Number 60 is 31.55. That mistake could be costly for Ricky Taylor. He's all of a sudden now 10 seconds behind that trio, having led them prior to this round of pit stops, well, other than the 60 car, who's up into second place and right with number 60. So that could end up being a costly mistake because that has put the... we're now looking at the overall season-long championship. That has handed the advantage back to the number 31 car again. It's been back and forth all the way through.
This is marvellous, Johnny, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm loving every second of it. I'm just almost living it. We go on board every time, working through the traffic. The 31 car here, Felipe Nasr, I think, has been a bit of a star in this race.
Agreed.
He's
right with the leader now.
Montoya getting held up through there. Now Montoya, now he's going to have a run on him here through five, because actually he's going to get I think he's going to take the lead, because Montoya made the mistake of defending there. There's no way you can go down the inside.
They've
into
got
five.
Either side of the traffic.
I think he's taken the lead. Felipe Nasr's right. In the lead now, so he's now just going to check out. Because Montoya was definitely holding him up. And then you've got Ollie Jarvis now also 0.2 seconds behind. And he's also going to want to try and clear Montoya and go with Felipe Nasr.
Yeah, I just want to see Nasr going into the distance. Turn six does have a bit of camber, a bit of banking on it. So you can't...
Yeah, you just don't defend into there. There's no way you can come on the inside. He had traffic in front of him, to be fair. But if he just stayed and taken his line. But because he actually compromised his exit so much, Felipe Nasr literally just drove down the left-hand side of him going into six.
Yeah, he was actually through halfway down that straight, wasn't he, effectively? Oh, he's been held up at the final corner. Johnny is really, really living all of this. The 55 of Ollie Jarvis was getting very close to second position there, but got stuck behind the BMW. The GT Le Mans BMW coming down into turn 12. I was going to say, Johnny, when you were saying that, you're living this now. Right, you're in the...
I'm feeling the frustration of the... I'm actually remembering the frustration when you're catching. You've got the guy in front. You want to catch him. You see the traffic ahead. Like, we got Ollie Jarvis going into five. He's seeing Montoya in front of him.
Montoya stuck again at turn five.
In front again of him, and he's thinking at this stage now, he's got a prototype now, so he knows he's going to hold him up a little bit more. He's going to go round the outside at six, which he does really nicely. Now he's going to have a problem here. Montoya's going to be held up at seven, and this is where maybe the 55 Mazda can get a run down the thing. But the 60 car, very quick in a straight line.
Yeah, got him on the curb a little bit there, but still got a good exit from turn seven. So Montoya holds his position, even though
the slipstream's working, John.
Starting to kick in as they go through the kink at nine, down at the braking area of 10. There's still a car ahead, and that, of course, is Felipe Nasr, who is the leader of the race. 31 DPI from 60 DPI from 55, all coming down to turn 12 at the moment. There's not even a second in it as they go under the Michelin Bridge and down towards turn one again. Living it from inside the car is one thing, as we have three different manufacturers in the top three. It must be even worse for those sitting on the pit wall, particularly for the drivers who may be finished now. There's nothing that they can do. They're watching what we're seeing. They're living what we're seeing. And you want to actually be affecting this, presumably, Johnny.
You're sitting there biting your nails. I remember the Sebring 2007 when Mello literally we won by a cigarette paper, and Mikasala and I were just sat there, nothing we could do at that point, and it was one of the most exciting. But it's more nerve-wracking being out of the car than in it, because in it you're just totally focused on what you're doing. You're not thinking about anything other than trying to work the traffic, get ahead of the car in front. But the bit between his teeth here, definitely.
Felipe Nasr, Jeremy, when he gets clear air, does seem to be quicker than Montoya. He's pulled out 1.6 seconds. Here comes Ollie Jarvis. Not quite close enough this time. It would be a big lunge here. Somebody said earlier on, I think Braselton Post Office will have run out of stamps by the end of this, because there's been so much sending it around these parts today, which I thought was
that.
A great tweet.
I saw that as well,
absolutely
yeah.
Great tweet. I'm not taking credit for that. That was from one of the listeners. Into turn one again. But already, Jeremy, 1.5 seconds, Felipe Nasr gone. As soon as he gets clear track, he's away in that Whelen Cadillac.
Yeah, really interesting, isn't it? And that they've bided their time in that car. Felipe Nasr, Johnny Mullen, absolutely is a star. I mean, why this guy didn't remain in Formula One is beyond me, because he is no question one of the top drivers in the world in whatever category he's driving, in my opinion, and he shows it time and time again. He's showing it again right now. It's going to be interesting to see whether he is able to extend a lead now over Juan Pablo Montoya, and whether or not Montoya can keep Jarvis behind, because I have no doubt that Jarvis can stay with Felipe Nasr, but now he's got to get past JPM as well. Yeah. That's easier said than done.
And he was held up rather badly.
Really badly. He lost like two and a half seconds.
Through turn six and seven. Ollie Jarvis had to follow the rather broken United Autosport prototype, the LMP3 car. Second place car going up the inside of the Pfaff Porsche into turn number 12, and that was very, very close indeed. Jarvis has to follow through past the Lexus, now past the Hart Racing Aston Martin that's leading GTD. And Jarvis having to make these manoeuvres now.
Well,
he's got to make the decisions now.
Absolutely. And the problem is, you say you will get it back, but if you get too many cars in between you and you start catching traffic in the wrong places and it happens three or four subsequent corners, then the car in front has a chance to clear that bit of traffic before you're there to make get an opportunity from it, and therefore it makes it harder to pass. You want to be tucked up behind somebody when they catch traffic, not 2-3 seconds back.
The leader will next catch the LMP3 third place car, the Riley Motorsports Dylan Murray in that car, but I think he's going to catch him on the back straight, so should be able to deal with that fairly quickly. But everybody having to deal with traffic at the moment. Oh, actually no, he hasn't caught them at that point. He's going to get him maybe on the start finish straight, maybe going into turn one. Gabriel Aubrey just ahead of that in the Tower Motorsports third place LMP2 car. Meantime, the battling GT Daytona has the leaders coming through it at the moment. The gaps beginning to tighten up in all of these classes with 90 minutes now to go, Jeremy. And this is the race we had been hoping for. It's taken a wee while, been bubbling. It's not as if nothing's been happening. Yes, we've had a lot of yellow flag periods, but this has been sort of almost frustratingly just out of our reach, and now it's really coming alive, just as we hoped it would do.
Yeah, no question about it. And this is going to be an exciting last hour and a half of this race. We're now within 90 minutes remaining, so I would expect they can probably do it on two stops from here, possibly, but it'll be fairly tight. There's still an awful lot can happen, because anytime you've got to make pit stops, there's constant traffic, as we've seen. You know, luckily for the leaders, I suppose, the field has been thinned out rather more than usually, particularly amongst the GTD cars. We've had high attrition there, mainly as a result of that single accident. And that's taken a bunch of cars out of us. We've lost 11 cars in this race now, have fallen by the wayside for various reasons, including, unfortunately, the Conor De Filippi BMW, the most recent retirement.
Juan Montoya held up with a bit of GT traffic going over the top at turn number two, and now down through the S's, and Ollie Jarvis is right back with them again on the run down to turn number six. They've got, for the moment at least, a little bit of clear air. Jarvis trying to close down as he goes through turn seven, and again Montoya with traffic ahead of him may just get a little bit of a draft there. Whelan Engineering Felipe Nasr further down that straight as he cuts through traffic himself, and he's going to have to make a big dive if he's going to get past that LMP3 car that's ahead of him. LMP2 car, yeah. Excuse me, that's, yeah. Gabby Aubrey, isn't it?
There's hardly any straight line speed difference between them. That's what makes it so difficult. With a well-driven LMP2, as Gabriel Aubrey will be doing, it's a difficult one for Felipe Nasr now, and he's going to have to struggle a little bit to get past Gabriel Aubrey here. He's going to need him to let him through.
I think actually it might be Scott Huffick. Excuse me, my apologies for that. I think it might be the 52 car.
Well, either way, a well-driven LMP2, it's going to be tough to pass for a DPI.
Well, same base chassis, of course, that as the DPI's got, and obviously a little more sophistication in the suspension engine department and the aero department for the DPI's, Jeremy, but this is turning into a cracker.
Well, it is. Scott Huffaker has actually set the fastest lap in LMP2 during this race, a 1:10.782, less than a tenth of a second ahead of Tristan Nunez in the number 11 car. Those are first and second at the moment. Thomas Merrill is driving the 11 car at the moment, with Huffaker chasing him less than 3 seconds behind. Gabby Aubrey less than about 18 seconds behind in third place.
And he's actually got the best first sector of the whole race.
Huffaker has, yes. In an LMP2 car.
Yeah.
That tells you all you need to know, Johnny, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
In terms of the performance potential there. IMSA, of course, slowed the LMP2s down and took performance away from them because the manufacturers in DPI didn't want to be racing them for the overall, but the aerodynamic performance of those cars is still very, very good Indeed.
Right, there's a lot of GT traffic ahead of Montoya. He's got like seven or eight cars heading up.
Lead has been held up as well.
Three. Yeah, they all have, and this is an opportunity for some lead changes.
If you're at the track side at the moment, the Mazda has the very green top to it, the LED light bar, and that is chasing down, that's the 55, Ollie Jarvis, chasing down Juan Montoya for the MSR number 60. That's got the purple top to it. Oh, very close going to turn number 7 and on to the back straight. And again, traffic right in the way of that scrap as they're heading down. Just a mass of headlights heading down. The lead has cleared the traffic. He gets a clear run into turn 10. Felipe Nasr, not too much curb, quite a lot of curb on the exit there. That car's riding the curb very well. Confidence from the leader.
It does look good, actually. I noticed that Montoya's car, especially at turn two, taking the apex there, the rear of the car was really hopping over the curb there. He didn't seem to be taking it quite as well as either the 31 car or the Mazda.
Mazda now looking at the back of the Mershank Acura right there, and there's more traffic ahead. Still with a little bit of the Penske orange, I think, on the top plane of that wing from last year.
This is an opportunity.
Big opportunity at turn five. This is where Montoya lost the lead, of course. He's had a better exit from turn five. He's going to be able to dive down the inside. He's taking a risk, and there's almost contact. I think there was contact between Montoya and the prototype in front of him. That's the... that is the tower car.
Car we were talking about. Yeah. Being driven beautifully there. And he's in his own race. He doesn't need to jump out of the way of everyone. But it's really, you can see how hard it is with the DPIs to get past him, because cornering-wise, they're almost identical. Straight-line speed-wise, they're almost identical.
Jordan Groves tweeting us, incredible racing inside the last 20 minutes. Hope you're watching on, Jordan. Free streaming video outside the US via imsaradio.com. Hit the live video tab. It's got our audio on it as well. Thanks for being with us. Coming up to nearly 9 o'clock in the evening, 13 minutes before nine here at Road Atlanta. That means just before two in the morning in the UK. Johnny Morlam.
I take my hat off actually a little bit to Montoya here, because he's really working the traffic in such a way that he's not allowing himself, like he did when he lost the lead, to get tripped up by any car in front. He's judging it. You can see where he's working the traffic. Either he's getting incredibly lucky or he's being really clever at the way he's working the traffic, and I think it's the latter. He's not getting held up, because that's the opportunity where coming down into 12 you have to get out of the throttle. That's where somebody that's a second behind you just sails past you on the following straight. That's not happening, so you have to give him credit for that.
Whilst we're keeping an eye on this, let's have a Mazda in-race update. GTD, Harter Racing, Aston Martin, Ross Gunn has pulled out 4 seconds now, and Lawrence Vanto, and then it's another 30 seconds back to the third place Allegra Motorsports machine, the Mustang sampling number 5 car. Sebastian Bourdais is in the pits and the engine cover is off. Shea Adam is looking at that. Kamui Kobayashi goes through, therefore, into fifth position in the 48 Ally Cadillac in the GT Le Mans category. It's 2 seconds between Tandy and Jaminet. Tandy's weathered that Porsche storm that he had for both of those cars behind him for a little while. The Kevin Estra car has recovered back out the pits after that side-by-side contact and is still in third position. In LMP2, it's Wynn Autosport and PR1 Matheson by just 6 tenths of a second. And at the front of the field, Montoya is under real pressure now. Ollie Jarvis has the smell of blood as he goes down into turn six through that banked area. Now heading off to seven. Little bit more curb taken by the Englishman. My, Montoya gets that Acura out of turn seven really well, but Ollie has managed to stay in the slipstream. Now gets up to terminal velocity just over the top of the right. Don't think he's close enough here, but this is nip and tuck really at the moment, almost like a cat playing with a wounded mouse here, because Montoya doesn't have
tyres, driving well.
He's driving the wheels off it, but it just doesn't seem to be as composed, that car, as what we've seen from the Cadillac or from the Mazda.
See, from the onboard, you can see he's literally putting it almost wheel perfect every apex. He's not outbraking himself. It's difficult because obviously it looks to me like the Mazda's a lot better through one, but the problem is then coming up over the top into two.
There's no opportunity, is there?
No opportunity. And then down through the S's, when you're following this closely, like Ollie Jarvis is following Montoya, you lose so much front downforce. So for Ollie Jarvis to stay this close to the car in front and still be doing the lap times he's doing tells me that he's got a lot more pace if he can just somehow clear Montoya.
Just after midday in South Australia, Ted the Toyman tuned in. This time zone working well for our Australian and New Zealand viewers and listeners, and there's nowhere you'd rather be at the moment than watching this. Coming up under the Fox Factory Bridge is the battle at the front of LMP2. Cross the line for the Wynn Autosport car, the number 11 going through, and right on the wheel track, Scott Huffaker, who's been driving beautifully in that number 52 PR1 Matheson car. And the number 11 still has just a little bit of performance in hand, I think, at the moment. It's Thomas Merrill who's behind the wheel of that car. All USA driving talent, Stephen Thomas. Tristan Nunes has done his part, of course. And Thomas Merrill now, the bronze, one of the two bronze drivers, up against Scott Huffaker, who is now close right in behind. This is extraordinary stuff, you know. If you add up the gaps between first and second in the two prototype classes, it's not 1 second at the moment after 9 hours of racing. Remarkable stuff, Johnny Morland.
It is, absolutely. Felipe Nasr, though, is checking out, 6.3 seconds in the lead.
That leader in GT Le Mans in the pit lane for Corvette. They'll need one more pit stop to get home from here and round off the GT Le Mans era in IMSA competition. Shea Adam is watching that. Shea, I think they're leaving Tandy in, are they?
Fuel and new tires, no driver change. You are correct, John. They have done the tire change beautifully. That was 13 seconds for a tire change. That's very impressive. That's what we've come to expect from Corvette Racing. It is a windshield tear-off, and now just waiting on fuel. Now, how much fuel do they put in the car this time? Because the next stop will need to be very short if they do a full fuel this time, or do they do a short turn? Full load
just in case there's any yellows. Also coming in, another class leader, that was Thomas Merrill in the LMP2 leader. That's the Wynn Autosport car. That car now has dropped back to second already because Scott Huffaker's gone through, and it's Jaminet that's gone through to take the lead in GT Le Mans, of course, and now on their own at the lead of LMP3. Riley Motorsport with the Ranch 74 car, as Garrett Grist in the Junior 3 car, I think, has just made a pit stop in that car. Maybe a lap or two ago at the front of the field. 7 seconds the lead. Here comes WeatherTech out of the lead of GT Le Mans. Now, how quickly can they turn this car around? Because it was only a couple of seconds between themselves and Corvette. Now, this might be a short fill. If you want track position, they're going to have to think. It's not the quickest of wheel changing going on the right-hand side. The left-hand side was finished early. No, they've gone for a full fuel fill in that, cleaning out all of the ducting on the front of the car. Where is the Corvette? Coming down to turn 10 now, through 10A. Out goes the fuel hose. They're going to get out in front here. It's going to be very tight, but I think the WeatherTech Porsche is going to get out in front. The Corvette is just on the front straight now as the Porsche re-emerges from the pit lane just ahead of the Corvette, but on cold tyres, Johnny.
On cold tyres, and Nick Tandy's had a lap to get up to temperature. I wouldn't be surprised if he just drives straight past and coming out of five.
And a third class leader in the pit lane, and that is the heart of racing, number 23. Shea Adam watching the Aston Martin stop. Ross Gunn seems to be staying in that car.
Yes, he is. Good luck trying to pry him out of this Aston Martin. It's fuel and tires for them, but they too will need another trip down the pit lane for a little bit more fuel to make it to the checkered flag.
very, very close indeed in the GT Le Mans battle. Just going out onto the back straight now, the 79 Porsche, as Nick Tandy is going into turn seven. I think Chamonix's got enough here. That was a really quick turnaround by the WeatherTech team. Out goes Ross Gunn. So moving into the final hour of the race, an hour and 16 minutes to go. Jeremy Shaw, and that was smart work in the pit lane by the WeatherTech crew. They've retaken the lead in GT Le Mans over the might of Corvette Racing. Chamonix pits from the lead. So that means Estra's gone through. Estra is out in front, but also it's a pit stop, is what I'm trying to say. But the GTLM. What's happened to Chamonix? Chamonix's dropped back. That's an odd one, because he was definitely ahead on the tracker and now is shown behind even the BMW in that 79 car. It's an odd one there. We'll check that one up. Faf Racing in. Championship contender. Championship favourite now, you'd have to say, in GT Le Mans. Shea Adam.
Fuel tires, windshield tear off for Larry there, leaving him behind the wheel, as you would do. They too will need a splash of fuel to make it to the end of this race, though, with just a little bit too much time to go on the clock. It should be a short splash, but man, they're waiting for every last drop of VP Racing fuel to get into the tank. And this car, which goes through the nose of the car, easy for me to say, pit board goes back up, Larry goes back out, and into the pit lane. Mazda Motorsports. Remember, this DPI will not be racing with us next year, which means that the final driver for Mazda and the 55 will be Harry Tinknell. He has just been installed into the car for new Michelin tires. They are doing windshield tear off for him as well. Is seeing is very important at this time of night, as you might imagine. Waiting on the fuel. Fuel comes out. See you, Harry.
Yeah. And I reckon, John, they can get to the end of the race with just one more pit stop in that number 55 car. That's the first car, I believe, to have made its penultimate pit stop in this race.
Yeah, and that you always want to make certain your last pit stops first, so that you've got strategic options. So making your second to last pit stop first is not the worst thing either. And that car's got real pace. Had real pace in the hands of Ollie Jarvis, and Harry Tinknell's not going to be driving it any slower, Johnny.
Absolutely, and they've got the pace. Maybe they can do a bit of an undercut here and get ahead and get some clear track, get those laps in, and then they can actually come out even after the next round of pit stops in front still.
Cooler air, turbo engine will like that. A little bit fatter, it'll run well. The Mazda, relatively light on its tyres though, so that is something that you have to be careful of, getting some energy into that car's tyres when you first go out.
Yeah, absolutely, and obviously Harry's driven in the dark before, and he's been having a really good run in this race, but he'll be up to speed quite quickly, get those tyres hot and get going. And that was a supreme stint from Ollie Jarvis there. He didn't ever quite get past Montoya, but he was keeping him honest the whole way and got them back into a podium position.
And kept us entertained
this
as well.
Outlap is going to be critical.
Outlap is going to be critical. Yeah, totally agree. Absolutely agree. All outlaps are critical here. PR1 going out. Yeah. Mikkel Jensen in the 52 car. Gabby Aubrey in the number 8. 31, the leader, just getting caught in behind that emerging LMP2 former leader there.
He lost like a second and a half there just alone.
Two corners.
Maybe 2 seconds, in 2 corners. Like Jeremy says, this is all critical now. You can see the car in front weaving side to side, trying to get tyre temperature going.
Just trying to work out where Aubrey is.
That's the 55 car, isn't it, in front? Yeah, that's the 31 coming up to the 55 with Harry Tinknell on board. Harry Tinknell weaving from side to side, still trying to generate tyre temperature.
Desperate not to go a lap down here. Obviously, the 31 is yet to make the corresponding pit stop to the one that the Tinknell 55 Mazda has just made. Ollie Jarvis came in, swapped to Harry Tinknell. He'll take this to the end from here. You get the feeling now that it's just starting to come alive again for Harry Tinknell. Just a bit of
Do you think they did a bit of a short fuel there so they can actually gain a bit of track position, and then they know they've got to do one more stop to the end anyway, and if there's a yellow, then they can actually take it then? Do you think maybe that's the situation?
Possibly.
It's tight on fuel, Johnny. It's tight on fuel. There's an hour and 40 minutes to go, it was when they came in. About 37, 38 minutes is about what they can
that's
do.
That's tight even with another full stop, is what you're Correct. Saying. So they would have taken full fuel then. Okay, yes. That makes sense. He's being held up badly through five.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
They're taking what they believe is a minimal amount, obviously. It's pretty much a full tank from here. You can't gamble on there being another caution.
Out to turn seven, and this is not a battle for position, but it is a battle to stay on the lead lap. Harry Tinknell has every opportunity to do what he has to do. The BMW pulls across and almost hits the 24 BMW, hits the 55 car down the inside for Felipe Nasr, and there's off the track moment for the 55 Mazda, who's then almost hit up the diffuser by the BMW.
Nasr got past, basically just stayed left going down the back straight there, John, and they literally split. It was like a Schumacher-Hakkinen moment, splitting
commentated on that live from Spa.
I was just praying that Tinknell would stay left, and he actually had to go to the right of the Porsche, and then Felipe Nasr just kept his footing, got a really good run, and literally just went down the left-hand side, had the inside for 10A. Harry tried to stay in on the braking, but just slightly went deep and then ran a little bit of dirt on the exit.
Car's heavy at the moment for Harry, still getting the tyres up to temp and pressure. Yep. Lots more sparks from the 55 car through the final corner than from the 31. That tells the story visually for you if you're trackside here at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. Just over an hour, or just on an hour and 10 minutes to go. Off the lead lap, yes, from Tinknell, but now he's got to get the pace up and he's got to keep pushing, because the equivalent pit stop from Felipe Nasr is yet to come. And Jeremy, that car should be in the pit lane in what, a lap or two, the lead car?
Yeah, I would think so. It's certainly pretty soon now. Yes, the last stint, number 31 and number 55 car came in on the same lap. So number 31 car stayed out a bit, little bit longer. He's running great lap times, and he's going to, of course, need a little bit less fuel to get to the end from here. So the pit stop should be a little bit quicker.
Just put the leader in what our IndyCar colleagues would call the danger zone. If there's a yellow flag now, of course. The Mazda has made it stop. It's showing a lap off the lead lap at the moment if you're watching the Alcamel timing and scoring via IMSA.com. But don't worry about that, because, yes, we have just seen it go a lap down. But Harry Tinknell will be pushing as hard as possible to reduce and then try and get back on the tail of the leader. I think there's pace in that car, maybe not right at the start of the stint, although Ollie Jarvis seemed to have a lot of pace when he came out of the pits. New tyres, new cold Michelin tyres, which is not the best thing for Harry Tinknell, but he can still see Felipe Nasr in the distance. Maybe one more lap, 28 laps now for Felipe Nasr since the last time that he pitted. So he'll be down the pit lane this time or the next time by, and Harry could do with a bit of clear track here to get a good lap in and get back on the lead lap.
Yeah, absolutely, John. It's so frustrating when you're coming up to traffic, especially you come up to two and down into the S's. You're just really praying you're going to catch it at the right moments.
Shea Adam has some news of another retirement. We saw the Mustang sampling car with the rear deck off a little bit earlier on. Shea, what's the issue there, and is that car coming back?
Having engine issues, and they were trying to work. We heard earlier that Christian Fittipaldi told us they were working with around engine issues. Well, they could no longer work around the engine issues, and it was too much. Looks like a cracked header. That car is retired.
Exhaust manifold problems for that car. Thank you, Shea. Just translate that for the international audience there. So, Harry Tinknell back up the speed and right with Felipe Nasr as Nasr peels back off into the pit. So as we thought, just a couple of laps more and Tinknell is back up this pace, first and second in the pit lane. Nasr and Montoya into the pit lane. So Ricky Taylor will go through to lead for Cunningham and Alter. And Harry Tinknell, who's got Kamui Kobayashi ahead of him as well, who still has to pit. He now has to hopefully have a clear lap. And, well, there's a bit of clear space in front of the 55. He's got the 0-1, which is the Renger van der Zander Cadillac, right ahead of him. That car hasn't been on the pace, but he'll get a decent tour down the back straight from that Cadillac. This might not be the worst thing. Work still going on at Whelan. Fuel still going in. The rest of the pit stop is done, but this is going to be cold tyres again for the 31. So the boot is now still... The boot now has gone onto the other foot. Onto the front straight now for the 55 Mazda, as the two cars that have pitted are moving. Nasser is out of the pit lane. So is... Oh, Elio Castroneves been installed in the number 60 Acura.
Yeah, and they gained a lot there. So it'll be interesting to see how much of that they lose on this outlap.
Yeah, they've come out into traffic as well.
You saw the Mazda there going round the outside of turn three, going round the outside of Elio Castroneves in the 60 car. So already, I think, because of the hot tyres... I think that was the 55 car.
Absolutely right, and that's critical. That we talked about that. That's why the number 55 car was brought in early. Get out there on a fresh set of tyres, try and make up some ground. He was clearly held up by the number 60 car. He's had now, what, seven laps to try and get ahead of the number 60 car on, after it made its pit stop. Seems to have done so. We have to see now where the number 31 car comes out in relation to everybody else.
I think he had
it's ahead.
Yeah, he had a head, and I think quite a healthy lead. But again, it'll be interesting to see how much they can eat into that over the next three or four laps.
Coming down to turn 12 now for the Whelan car, and he's got a couple of cars between himself and Harry Tinknell, who is now onto the front straight. The 0-1 Cadillac actually with Renger van der Zander turning pretty good lap times, but I would expect that Harry Tinknell would like that car not to be between him and the 31 car.
No blue flags either. He's not going to get blue flags because he's not going to go a lap down in case he gets a wave by later on in the race. So this is going to be tough for Harry to get past the 01 car.
Well, he is a lap down at the moment. So actually this might help, because Renger van der Zander will be pushing hard to try and get back on the tail of the 31. Through into the lead, by the way, Kamui Kobayashi, who is yet to make the equivalent stop to the ones that we've just seen from the cars we were talking about. Ricky Taylor back out onto the racetrack in the number 10 Cunningham and Alter Acura after his penultimate pit stop, and he is desperately slow. I mean, it was really painful coming out of turn 10. He was passed by an LMP2 car there as if he was chained to a post. Now gets back up to speed. It's the Wins car that he's going to have a look down the inside, but can't even make that one. It's just a question of patience here, Johnny, and getting the attempts back up again.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't overcook it. Otherwise, you flat spot a tyre, or worse still, you go off and have an incident that damages the car. You, like you say, I mean, you could hear him there having a big lift through the apex of 12. And once his tyres are up to temperature, he'll be taking that flat without even thinking about it.
Look, the number 55 car is less than 2 seconds now behind Felipe Nasser. And they are, the pair of them, 10 seconds ahead of Elio Castroneves in the number 60. Number 48 car still leads. That has yet to make its penultimate stop in this race. But this is still a great contest and great strategy there, I think, from the Multimatic Mazda team to get that car right up with Felipe Nasser. Going to be passing is going to be difficult, but of course on the next round of pit stops, the number 55 car is going to spend longer on pit lane because it'll need more fuel to get to the end than will the number 31 car and the number 60.
Elio Castroneves, remember, just been plugged into this battle, whereas Felipe Nasser and Harry Tinknell have been in for a full stint, minimum a full stint, before they came out the pits this time around. So Castroneves hasn't been in the car for a while. Really hard to just switch back on again. And he had a tough exit right into traffic as he came out of the pit lane. And on such things, Johnny, do races like this turn?
Absolutely, and again, Elio, fine racing driver, but he's the third driver in the team, so he's not going to be quite as up to speed of driving at night in the car, knowing what the visibility is like, knowing how it is when you get the tyre.
We talk about Elio Castroneves, John.
Yeah, true.
Talk about Elio Castroneves. I mean, he's look what he did in Indianapolis.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not in any way. I'm just saying that obviously in a DPI, he doesn't have the experience levels of coming out and being able to get right back on it. And so he's always going to take maybe a couple of laps longer than it would if he was racing the car all season long.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
And he hasn't had that much time in the car this week either. That's the other thing. I always feel sorry for quote-unquote third drivers.
Yeah, it is tough because you come in, you're expected to be pretty much on the pace of the regular drivers. You get a fraction of the time in the car.
Yeah, absolutely right. Let's take a Mazda in-race update. Cracking battle at the front of the field. Kamui Kobayashi is in the pit and will hand the lead back to Felipe Nasr, who's going through turn one now. Chased, hassled, harried by Tinknell as they go through turn number one. A very quick stop by Kamui Kobayashi. He is emerging from the pit lane now. So it's Nasr in the wheel and Cadillac from the Mazda of Harry Tinknell, the 30 one from the 55, then Elio Castroneves, just another second or so further back down the road, then Ricky Taylor is about 5 seconds further back in the number 10 car. In LMP2, the leader, Gabby Aubrey, Tower Motorsport number 8, is into the pit lane for his pit stop. That means Mikkel Jensen will go through in retake the lead in the 52 PR1 car. In LMP3, Riley Motorsport leads in the 74 Ranch car, the number 74. Garrett Grist in the Junior 3 Racing 30 in second position, 40 seconds between those two. Estra leads for Porsche ahead of Nick Tandy. Still out there, Kevin Estra, and they're on a different strategy, of course. They were forced onto that when they got the puncture many, many moons ago. And they've been just staying off strategy. The two WeatherTech cars splitting their strategy just a little bit. Tandy 17 seconds away from the lead. And in GTD, Pfaff Motorsport lead for Porsche by 0.2 seconds. Great battle. Vanto versus Ross Gunn. And about 10 seconds further back, Zach Veitch in the remaining Lexus RCF. That's your Mazda in-race update. The next hour is the last hour, and it starts right now here on IMSA Radio.